So welcome to my sitting room. Some candles going, a bit of ambiance. I probably should have lit the fire, it would have looked really nice, but I didn't, so there you go. Okay, so we have a number of questions and we'll try to get through them as quickly as possible. That fly would go away. Well, not rush for it, Amina. So we'll start off with Jonathan McLean Lambie. If I pronounce anyone's name wrong, I apologize in advance, but you know, names are hard sometimes. So his first question is, the 40 servants, any parallel with the 40 saints, which are the 40 martyrs of Sebaste? And I'd have to say, I was totally unaware of these things. I never heard of them before. So if there is any parallels with them, it's totally unintentional and nothing to do with any sort of planning or any sort of thing. I don't know an awful lot about the saints, which is probably heresy. Well, literally is heresy for a Catholic, although I am not no longer a Catholic and haven't been for a long while. But I had a quick look on the link you sent me, and the martyrs, they all died. I would say no, there's no other than 40. And there's loads of things that have the number 40. It's just the number. The second question is, the four major servants that you recently released, which is the four devils, any parallels would say the four horsemen are similar archetypes? Well, the four horsemen is pestilence, famine, death, and something equally horrible that's probably really obvious, you know, like standing on Lego. But which obviously is, you know, you don't want them hanging around. But what they are based on is the whole thing of health, wealth, wisdom, and happiness, which is healthy, wealthy, and wise, plus happiness. So that was the idea, the total idea before the four devils, was to use that thing, you know, that if you have these four elements in your life, then you've, you know, everything you could possibly want. You have, getting very tongue-tied, very tongue-tied in this one. So it's health, wealth, wisdom, and happiness, and that was what the four devils were aimed straight at. So kind of, you know, not four horsemen obviously, but was based on something, wasn't just random four things. So not much more I can say about that. Robbie La Liberté, Robbie, please tell me how to pronounce your name. La Liberté, when do things ever go to plan? Not actually a real question, but it was because I said when I put up the Q&A, it was if all things go to plan, then this would happen. When do things always go to plan? Well, if I was to take that as a serious question, it would be sometimes things do go to plan. But I have found that creatively, the best thing to do is to have as loose a plan as possible. You probably should have a general direction of doing things, but particularly with writing or art or music, any of these things, you should, like, in my opinion, for the most part, I try to have as loose a plan as ending. So when do things ever go according to plan? On a good day, when it works out, probably shouldn't. Katz Technulp, for the next Q&A, I would love to hear you weigh in on Morrison and Moore and the pros and cons, likes, dislikes. They are boat riders, artists, and magicians. So yeah, the Alan Moore, Grant Morrison hatred thing and rivalry and stuff like that. And I have to assume that most of that is on Alan Moore's side of things. I don't think Grant Morrison cares as much about it as Alan Moore seems to care about it. And it all stemmed from back in the Warrior days when Grant Morrison is obviously a number of years younger than Alan Moore, and he was, you know, coming up or was trying to get involved, and he was talking to Des Skinner, who was the editor and kind of co-creator in a lot of the strips in the magazine comic called Warrior. And I think there is an overlap between Grant Morrison and Alan Moore writing for Warrior. I think Grant Morrison did write a story that was published in Warrior, you know, before Alan Moore left and had his first major incident of falling out very publicly with publishing an editor or whatever. So he has a history of doing this. But the main thing started when Grant Morrison was offered Miracle Man, offered to take over Miracle Man by Des Skin. And he wrote to Alan Moore going, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get in anyone's way. I don't want to get any bad blood between them because I really respect you and all that. And supposedly Alan Moore wrote him back a very threatening letter saying that if you do this, I will ruin you in comics and all this kind of thing. Grant Morrison talks about that in Talking With Gods, that movie. There is an interview with, I think, Pádraic O'Meallaid, the fellow Irishman who regularly interviews Alan Moore. I think it could be one of his where Alan talks about it and says he didn't kind of write that letter. But at the same time, he talks about Grant Morrison being a really kind of a nobody at the time. And he remembers meeting him had some sort of meal or something like that through friends. And it was kind of like, there's this fan, this guy would love to meet you, rather than, you know, a contemporary or another writer or something like that. But he basically thinks Grant Morrison's useless. And, you know, but Alan Moore thinks everyone's useless. And he is the only good writer. And everything that has been ever done in comics since, that isn't him, or since, you know, Watchmen, V for Vendetta, or Promethea, or whatever he is, he's done is rubbish, and he thinks it's all terrible and comics are an awful thing. And so as much as I like Alan Moore and all that, he definitely has a history of, you know, not getting on with people. Like, David Lloyd doesn't talk to him anymore, or he doesn't talk to David Lloyd over an interview with David Lloyd give, and over the fact that when Alan gave all the money for Feet for Vendetta, his, you know, the film, to David Lloyd, Alan made it very public that David Lloyd never said thank you for that. He actually talked to David Lloyd about that, and he kind of skirted around it. But so he doesn't talk to David Lloyd. Dave Gibbons doesn't really talk to him. Dead Skin doesn't talk to him. Most of DC doesn't talk to him. So obviously Grant Morrison doesn't talk to him. So, I mean, he's very isolated himself, and I think he's okay with that. So apart from all of that kind of thing, they're both huge influence on me. Alan Moore would be more an influence on my writing and my ideas, and Grant Morrison would be more of an influence on how he approaches things, and I'd probably be less of a fan of his actual body of work than I would Alan Moore. Now, Alan Moore has a load of rubbish stuff as well, I don't think everything's golden. Promethea is brilliant. Feet for Vendetta is probably my favourite of his, but includes an awful lot of nostalgia for me in that, so I know it's not in any way perfect. I love the artwork, I love David Lloyd. Interestingly enough, I don't like an awful lot of David Lloyd's later stuff, so I think it kind of, his Hellblazer stuff doesn't do an awful lot for me. But, I don't know, I genuinely think all of the thing, the feud between Alan Moore and Grant Morrison, is on Alan Moore's side of things. But if you want to actually really know more about that, you should probably ask Ian Cat Vincent, who is in the 40 Servants group, as he knows Alan Moore. So he'd be a guy to talk to. I have not met either of these people and only know them through their work and through their public interviews and stuff. But I like both of them and I have respect for a lot of them. Magic-wise, both of them don't seem to believe in magic anymore in the way I would. Well, I probably... I don't know. Grant Morrison seems to come back on what he actually thinks magic is in some interviews he's done, but going by his disinfo lecture, hugely influential on me. I know very little about what Alan Moore does magically, other than his approach to, he equates magic and art as being the same thing, which I do to some extent, but I don't think they're the same thing, which I think he thinks they are the same thing. Again, ask Ian about it, he'll know more. Okay. And another one from Katz. Both Moore and Jodorowsky view the superhero mythos potentially negatively, and the glut of superhero films today as making a negative impact on society. Could you touch on that too? Yeah, Alan Moore said that very recently in one of those videos he did, the new ones for that French site, that he thinks that all these superhero films are definitely having a negative effect on society. I have not heard Jodorowsky say it, but if he has, then he has. I gave up on the superheroes movies somewhere in the middle of Iron Man 2, and that's, I kind of turned it off, and that was the end of it. And didn't like the Batman movies, at all. I liked the first one kind of, but I think I got maybe half an hour, 40 minutes into The Dark Knight. I don't like it. The one thing alone, his voice just really, really, really pulled me out of it. It just seems so stupid. And Kevin Conroy is what Batman sounds like. That's just the way it is. Are they having a negative effect? I don't know. They're having a negative effect on, certainly on superheroes, in that they've become very watered down and, you know, just marketing. But are they having a negative effect on people? I think Alan's saying it in the way that, you know, when you have these people going around, that it kind of takes the onus off the individual to do anything with their lives. You know, that, you know, you leave it to the superheroes or to the gods or something like that. I'm not really sure. Like, at the same time, this is a guy who is partly responsible for the rise of Anonymous, which is about taking, you know, control back and stuff like that. Grant Morrison completely, just as a side, sees it as the other way and sees superheroes as, you know, what's going to save humanity, in the sense that you have the idea of the atomic bomb, or you have the idea of Superman, which he says is a much better idea, and that, you know, the power of ideas, that we, you know, these are superheroes are powerful ideas, in the way the Greek gods were and the Roman gods and stuff like that. So I have a tendency to probably side more with Grant Morrison on all of this rather than the two people you asked about. But I don't enjoy superheroes anymore. I used to love them, and now I find them tremendously boring and have very, very little interest in them whatsoever. And so, I don't know, I think burnout, but also, they're just not that interesting. Like, the thing about Superman is that the only way to make him interesting is to make him less than what he is. Like, you know, that's why Kryptonite was brought in, because he was too good. You know, he's unbeatable, and that, you know, that's a terrible narrative. That's, you can't really do much with that as a fiction, nor as a story, or as a hero's journey. And anytime I try to get back into the comics element of things, it's just the same stuff over again. Every 2 years, there's a reboot of Batman. You know, every, like, the last couple of times, how many times can you reboot the DC Universe or the Marvel Universe? Many times can you start X-Men from the beginning? All that stuff. It's boring. So next we have, let me see if I get this right. It's Jakob Mikkelsen, doing my best. What does a normal day and a normal week look like for you? Right, a normal day would be, I get up at about, depending, about 8 o'clock in the morning, and I walk around brain dead for about 20 minutes until I have my coffee. And I ground feed animals, do all that thing, and then for the first while I just check emails and messages and catch up on, you know, social media and stuff like that. And then after that, the main guts of my day would be spent, different days will either be spent drawing, editing, putting together the podcasts or the videos or whatever it is I'm working on. So it'll be different every day, but it's from that, and I'll finish at about 6:30 in the evening when Vanessa gets home from her work, and then by about 9:30 I'm in bed and I'm reading till about 12, or watching videos or tutorials or stuff like that. So it's quite boring, really, not, you know, but that's 5 days a week. And then on Saturday and Sunday, it's again, I'll try and get, maybe if I've, depends on what, if I'm doing a big project or I'm doing stuff, I will work Saturday and Sunday as well, because I enjoy it and stuff like that. But yeah, it's the full week. That is what I do, that whole thing. Are you able to do this semi-professionally? I'm able to do it completely professionally. This is all I do. But it depends on what you mean by this. Like, a podcast, no. YouTube, no. 40 Servants on its own, no. The Patreon on its own, no. The art on its own, no. But all of that combined, yes. And one of the things I did is that a few years ago, I spent some time getting myself out of any sort of debt so that I wouldn't have any outgoings. I massively reduced all of my outgoings as much as I could, so that when it came to it, that for me to be able to do this professionally, or you know, as my living or whatever, well, I've been working as an artist professionally for 10 years at this point, but being able to do it where I'm mostly be able to do the stuff I just want to do, rather than having to do an awful lot of work for other people. I still have to do work for other people. It's not, you know, that's, and that will be for the foreseeable future. That's where the bulk of my income does come from. But to be able to spend so much time on projects like the 40 Servants or the YouTube, the podcast and all that, comes out of having made my life very simple and not having many overheads or outgoings and stuff like that, so that it doesn't cost an awful lot for me to do what I do, so therefore I can do it, if that makes sense. And also, when I said I was in debt, I wasn't tremendously in debt either. Maybe $7,000 or $8,000 in debt. Obviously, I still have a mortgage now, but that feels different, even though it's massive debt. But so it's like no credit cards, nothing like that. And the big thing about when you work for yourself or you're doing this kind of thing is there's people are always told, and it's one of the, you know, the self-help guru type things, is pay yourself first. And that's bullshit. I don't agree with that. The first thing you do when you get money is you pay your bills. And then if you have a lot of money, boringly, you pay those bills in advance. Because if you don't have a regular income, which I don't, like I don't have a set amount that I make, you have to be well ahead of everything, because there is a likelihood that you mightn't work this week, you know, if something mightn't come in or whatever. It's less and less like that now, but it was for a while that you couldn't be guaranteed that you would have work every week. And so when money came in, when good money came in, I paid ahead, you know, pay mortgage ahead, pay bills ahead. I'm, you know, always way ahead on utilities. I'm never in debt. That's, you know, so paying yourself first, no. I also, any money I make from, say, Patreon goes straight back into to make things better. Like, so it paid for lights, it paid for lenses, it paid for hosting, it paid for, you know, to upgrade stuff, it paid for all that. So it was, it's rather than just taking it and spending it on, you know, life or whatever, it each time tried to make what I do that bit better using, you know, any kind of that money from Patreon. So yeah, so can I do the same profession? Yes, but it depends on what you call this. I've been doing it as an artist. I've been working, I'd say, about 10 years. Sometimes lean, sometimes really good. And so yeah. He also asks, I was wondering if you could share some other methods of feeding the servants instead of altar offerings. Well, I know some people have done things where they've donated blood to, you know, like to blood banks, whatever, and did that in the name of the healer, which I thought was quite cool. But which it's not the same, I don't think, as blood magic in the same way. I'm not into that. I don't think that's a good idea. Just because what do you do after that? What's the next step? It seems like the ultimate kind of same with kind of like sex magic offerings or sexual fluid offerings. There's no next step. So if that is your baseline of what you're doing to do anything, what happens when you need to go up a gear? Or, you know, so every time you want something, you have to give some blood or something. I don't know, it seems too much and it's unneeded. So other things, it depends on what you think the servants are or what kind of model of magic you follow or that kind of thing. So if you have an energy model kind of thing going on, you can offer some energy. Jason Miller talks about doing that an awful lot with spirits, you know, where you build up some energy and offer them that. You can offer things like fasts or meals. Like the whole Krishna conscious or Hare Krishna movement is that you always offer all your food first to Krishna, and then it becomes holy food. And there's that in Telema as well, in a kind of separate way, but very, very similar idea. So you could do that. You could offer meals, you could offer sweets, or, you know, do something nice for someone else. The best way to do something nice for someone else is to do something that no one will ever know you've done, so that you can't, you know, you can't take any kind of, well, you can take pride out of it, but you can't take any sort of praise for it, you know. So there was a thing I came across years ago, that a guy, he would leave money on the street and walk away, so you know you wouldn't wait to see if someone picked it up or whatever. Like you just leave money, or you do something, you know, pay for the next coffee, but do it in a in a place that you're not going to be back, so you know you're not going to be, oh, and you know, this is the coffee you paid for, whatever. Do stuff that you can't, you know, get praised for, and then offer that to whatever servant you're working on. You can also do things like like offer your exercise, that kind of thing. Like I'm doing this, like at the end of yoga, there's an offer thing where you send you do it in, what's the word? You do it for other people, you know, you send out the energy of that you've created for other, the help of the world or whatever. So you can do that. Like, same with anything that you can feed any servant on anything. You can feed it on hate, you can feed it on anything at all. But like the 40 servants are fed by attention and use. The offering is just a nice thing you do to say thank you or to think. It's not the thing that gets you your desire. The thing that gets you desire is the mindset you put yourself in, all that kind of thing, and the servants get more powerful. The ideas of the servants get more powerful by use, by attention. So why a public thanks is really good, because it's giving attention and it's, you know, widening the sphere of people who know what the 40 servants are and stuff like that. So yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about feeding the servants, just, you know, once you're giving them attention and use, but the offerings are just a thank you and a nice thing to do, and that's more what that is. So do something that is related to gratitude and thankfulness and stuff like that, I would suggest. But with all of these things, go with what feels right to you. Hugh Hackett asks, have I thoughts on money spells? And I do. My thoughts and money spells are that they're okay to do as long as you're not doing them all the time. Because I think there's a good case to be made that emergency magic is probably the worst type of magic. But it's also sometimes, you know, the most effective, because you're so geared, you're so in the zone, you have to get this. You know, this has to be done, I have to get the money, whatever it is. Whereas if you're just a general, I need some extra money, whatever, you don't have the, you know, momentum to go through. The thing about money spells is when people start getting into magic first, one of the first things to do is to try and win the lottery. Or to try, like that, so many people message me, ask me what servant is the best servant to use to win the jackpot. And one, I think that's very limiting on, you know, on like just zoning it down to the lottery. And two, if it's probability enhancement, if magic is probability enhancement, then you probably will increase the likelihood that you will win the lottery, just not enough to actually win the lottery. And it's, you could do much better magic and much better things for, like, what do you actually want? What do you want the money for? And then enchant for that, or magic for that, or, you know, work with servants for that. I think that's a better thing. Another really good thing to do is that rather than enchant for money or enchant for thing, is enchant for something that will only happen because you've got the money. So say you need $1,000 to pay your rent. So rather than doing magic for $1,000 to pay your rent, do magic for a bottle of wine. And the wine would be the thing you would only be able to buy once you had the $1,000 or more than $1,000 to pay the rent. You know, once that's covered, then you would be able to buy the bottle of wine or something like that. There's the whole thing in the remote viewing is that rather than when they did the stock exchange thing, the first time they did it on silver and it worked for them, the second time it didn't work for them, which is interesting, where instead of trying to remote view the results, they would remote view themselves doing something that would change depending on the result. So if silver went up, they would hold a fish or whatever it was. If silver went down, they'd hold a violin or whatever it was. I can't remember what the actual thing is. So they would remote view that incident. So they go, oh, I see myself with a violin, don't put my money on silver or sell, whatever it is. So enchant for something that would only happen if the thing you want is assured. Probably, let's see if I can give another example. So if, rather than enchanting for your car to be fixed, you enchant for the trip that you will make once your car is fixed, if that makes sense. Money spells, Yeah, mostly they don't work because of the whole desperation factor, and sometimes they really work because of the desperation factor. If you're in dire need, St. Expedite is highly, you know, praised for that. I've never used them personally, but the other thing is, if you're always doing magic for money, then the problem, you know, you're probably better served to try and sort your life out financially, rather than trying to do magic all the time for money or whatever. J.S. Miller's great book, Financial Sorcery, I think it's called. If you're interested in money magic, check that one out. And another non-question, this is from Jerry, the one of the mods on the group. And he says, Tommy Ken, my brother, I just want to say that you're a good man. And I just want to say that you're a good man. You're possibly the person on Facebook from the occult side of things that I know the longest. So there you go, you've put up with me for all these years. So yeah, that was the Tommy Kelly podcast. So yeah. So if you like this kind of thing, then I would suggest that you go to adventuresandwoobie.com and check out the rest of the podcast. I think there's about 30 of them maybe at this stage. There's a few other Q&As. If you want to get in on the next Q&A, then check out Patreon, my Patreon page, and that will also support what I'm doing. If, you know, if you want me to make more of this kind of stuff and be able to continue doing all these things and spend more time devoted to it, then go to tommykelly.com, and that's T-O-M-M-I-E. TheFourthServants.com will get you everything about The Fourth Servants. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, 500px, Flickr, all the places. And if you can like and share all of my stuff with everyone you've ever met or know, that would be extremely helpful to me. But if you can't, then in the meantime, good people of the internet, may you be well and may you have a wonderful week, and may all of your wishes and dreams come true.